we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here.
Okay, so I'm sitting here with a really funny comedian. Met him a couple years ago in Orlando at a little open mic place called Jack's Pub and Grub. He's doing some cool things in comedy. I see him out there touring around with Carlos Mencia. He's got some things going on in Central Florida, and he's also got some shows coming up in St. Louis, correct?
Yeah, me and Mencia are out in St. Louis okay. Next week.
And this is Eugene Torres, everybody.
Hey, what's up? Yeah, we're in St. Louis next week. It's kind of cool for me. I grew up maybe an hour and a half outside of St. Louis.
Okay.
Either the second or third time I ever did comedy was in St. Louis.
Okay.
So like, it's kind of like a little bit of a homecoming. I've had everybody from around the area hitting me up and they're coming back through. They're going to come hang out.
So is that where you're from?
I'm from a small town in Illinois.
Okay.
I tell everybody I'm from Springfield, Illinois, because that's the closest thing you're going to find on the map. But like, I'm from a town of 200 people.
Oh, wow.
So like you blink and you drive right past where I grew up at, man. Yeah.
So what brought you out of there? How did you get interested in comedy, and what got you out of that small town and into, I guess you went to St. Louis first?
You know, I think I always wanted to be a comedian.
Okay.
I just didn't know how. I grew up, like I said, I grew up in an area where there is nothing. Like, you went to school and like, I mean, I went to a school that had 200 people in the entire high school.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
so you're doing like, stand up to like cows and stuff.
Corn so fields. Like, it was weird too, because I'm Puerto Rican and like, yeah, I can blend in as an Italian or whatever, but like my dad can't. My dad is an Afro-Latino. My dad had like an Afro.
Okay.
He's darker than I am. And we were just in an area that was not us, right? And my dad's a New Yorker. So it's kind of where I get my accent and stuff from as well. But I would go to the school and everybody there was just being pushed into the agriculture industry.
Okay.
And I was like, Dad, this ain't for me. This ain't what I'm going to do. I had teachers tell me that you ain't really going to be shit. You know, you can either go do agricultural work or you can work in a factory. But there was no like.
There was no opportunity in that.
There was no, but there was not. There wasn't even any hope for anybody. Like they just like felt like this is what people do. And that's the end of it. And I think my mother wanted a girl when I was born. Like, I'm the youngest, and I think she wanted a girl because she used to put me in, like, pageants and shit when I was a baby.
So, what, two older brothers?
Yeah, I got an older brother, but I got an older sister who's 10 years older than me.
Okay.
But I think she just wanted a girl. And she started putting me in pageants and stuff.
You look like you could do some pageants, man.
I mean, I was a dime piece as a child. That ain't no lie. I've won hundreds of pageant trophies.
Okay.
I'm a damn pageant legend.
He's like, and those aren't even participation. That's winning, baby.
No, you had to come out here and have some personality. And we would travel all over the Midwest on like the pageant circuit. Like I was like a male Honey Boo Boo at that point.
That's so funny. I didn't know they had male pageants.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real
niche thing.
Career. Yeah, you got about a 3 or 4 year run and then you're out of the game because it's a little creepy after that. But
oh, that's hilarious, dude.
So yeah, we did this shit up in Chicago, man. So, but the thing is about a male pageant, I guess, I don't know a lot about female pageants, honestly, but like a male pageant, we would come out like dressed up in different costumes and outfits and they would put a microphone in your face and be like, hey, say something to these people. And I'm like 3 years old. And like, they would just have me cutting like promos on stage in front of 100 people.
Okay. And that's where it was born, huh? That's where the spark.
I would imagine if you were to dive into my psyche, that's where the stand-up itch came from.
Okay.
I remember one time, I don't even know if we could do this anymore, but when I was like four, we were up in Chicago and I was doing this pageant and I was dressed like a cowboy. So like I had like flannel on, a cowboy hat, cowboy boots, and I had like 2 six-shooters on my side. And I just came out and the typical thing is you go out and you wave and you say whatever. But I came out and I pulled these guns out and I took headshots at every one of the judges. And then they brought the microphone to me. And they said, what do you have to say about the, everybody at the pageant or whatever the question was?
Yeah.
That's not the answer I was going to give. All I said was Chicago's not big enough for the rest of for everybody here or something along those lines. I just said like the city of Chicago is not big enough for all of us or something like that. And I won this pageant.
Calling them out. That's so yeah, funny.
I won that. We were poor too, so it was weird. We grew up, we were pretty poor. We showed up and these pageants would be in like fancy hotels at like the Ritz-Carlton's or the Four Seasons or something. And when you were in it, you would typically stay in that hotel, but we're not used to that lifestyle. And we would go up and like the bellhop or the bellman or whatever you call it. Like I said, I'm still poor, but he would come up and he would talk to you and he'd be like, hey, can we take your bags? But we were so poor, we didn't have suitcases. We had all our shit in like brown paper bags.
Yeah.
Like, nah, you can't.
You're like, nah, man. No,
we're good. So yeah, that evolved, I guess. And you know, once my career there was cut short, that was the end of my performing career for a while. And then I just kind of fell in love with the art of stand-up. And I was a good student, not by choice. I was just, I guess absorbed. I got a good memory.
And, did you so when did you do it first? When was the first time you did stand up?
July 30th maybe of 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, July so you've been 30th. Doing them and where was that the first time you did it?
It was a little place called the Tin Can Pub in Springfield, Illinois, which is no longer open.
Okay.
Because I was going to make a trip over that way, but it ain't open no more.
Oh, you want to go back to your roots there. And
I was just going to show up in this pub and be like, yo, I'm here. Let's do a show and just randomly do some shit.
That'd be cool.
But yeah.
How did it go? How'd your first time go?
Oh, I killed.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I mean, if
you
I look
have
back,
your material all set up or did you kind of did you have an idea what you were going to say?
I wrote a five. I wrote 5 minutes, but I was like, if I look back at it now, I didn't kill compared to the other open micers at that time. I killed. If I look back at it now, I would never release the tape.
But, yeah. You're like, oh man.
But like I was an MMA fighter. So like I found out how to do comedy from this guy I was helping train. Cause one thing you do as an MMA fighter when you're starting is a lot of times you'll like help train other people, that's a little kickback for you.
Okay.
And I had this guy who was just there trying to get in shape. And he's like, yo, I'm a comedian. And I go, you're a comedian? I've always wanted to do that.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah, come through to the show I'm doing. And he pitched it to me like it was a show and it was an open mic. So I went and checked it out and I was like, oh yeah, cool. And he goes, do you want to do it? And I go, yeah, I've always wanted to do it. He goes, well, we do this every week. Come back and sign up next week and see what you do. Just write 5 minutes of material. But I had been a fan of stand-up since as long as I can remember. Yeah. So I kind of, it wasn't me starting like not just, I had an idea.
You had an idea of what it was supposed to look like or sound like, yeah.
So I went back and I had five minutes and I was a one-liner guy at the time, which is crazy because I don't do that now, but I was a one-liner guy and I just went in there and did 5 minutes of one-liners. And I think because I just had the shit in joke format, it did better than everybody else.
Everyone else didn't know how to form a joke or the structure.
I knew how to write the setup of punchline or tag. And I was like, okay, well now if I look back, they're probably whack jokes, but at the time compared to everybody else on the open mic lineup at the Tin Can Pub, I did okay.
Okay. Nice. So there was the seed was starting to sprout. Then
I would say within 2 weeks from that, I quit MMA and put it all into the comedy basket.
And then, so you, from there, when did you go to Florida? How did you get to Florida?
I've always had ties to Orlando.
Okay.
I used to be a really good basketball player and my uncle coached an AAU basketball team down here. and I would come down here and play every year. But also, I'm from Gainesville. We moved to Illinois when I was a baby, but I'm from Gainesville. So my dad had family down here, and he moved back to be around them. And then it was an easy transition, because when I came here, I had parents here already.
Okay. So then you started doing comedy here in Florida. Because I know when I was there, you could go in every night pretty much, during the week.
That's different. So where I came from, like I said, like we had that one open mic, and it was sometimes once a week, sometimes once a month. There was no real set schedule. And to get stage time when I started, we would drive about 6 hours round trip to go to Chicago and do 5 minutes.
Then
we would come back. Like when I started, I was selling cars too. So I would go up to Chicago, do five, show back up, go sell some cars in the morning, leave and go back to Chicago and come back down and do another.
So you're like grinding.
I was running on like 2 hours of sleep for my first couple of years of comedy. And like, if I wasn't going to Chicago, I was making like the 4 hour round trip to St. Louis and doing the same thing. So like nowadays I see some of these younger guys at the mics, if I go to a mic anymore, and they're like talking about they had to drive 30 minutes to get here. And it's like, dude,
you're like, that is not putting work in, buddy. Like
30 minutes. I put in a full work day just on the road to do five.
See, I love hearing that about, because seeing, I saw you back when I was in Orlando, I think like 2015 or 16 or something like that. I don't know, 17 maybe. Mm-hmm. It's cool to see how much work you actually put in. Cause I've seen a lot of guys really grow over the years, and a lot of people just think that it happens all of a sudden. No, there's a lot of work and a lot of failure and a lot of growth and a lot of fucking eating shit.
I put way more. That's my dog in the back.
Oh, yeah.
We must be getting some mail soon.
Yeah.
I put in way more than a 40-hour week in the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody, the standard job is a 9-to-5 and you get paid hourly and all that. I put way more than 40 hours into comedy if you really want to break it down. And if you divide the amount of money you make by the hours you actually put in,
you're making
below minimum wage. Yeah, you're making way below minimum wage. But it's the craft, it's the love of it. This is what I was supposed to do. I think I've been good at a lot of other shit, but like this is the one thing that like feels like home.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was an MMA fighter, but that came off of just being a good athlete and like having drive. And yeah, I may be undefeated, but it wasn't my passion. Mm-hmm. It was just something I did because I never wanted to work a 9-to-5. And I go, well, I could fight people for money. I can do that.
Well, it seems like you took your work ethic from fighting and put that into comedy.
I've always been that, though. Okay. I think even when I was playing basketball, I would wake up early in the morning and run 2 miles, dribbling 2 basketballs.
Before practice?
Before I even went to school.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you were always had that work. Was your dad put that into you at all? Or how did you, what made you have that fire?
My dad is certainly a hard worker. That's 100%. My dad is definitely the hardest working guy I've ever met. Even to today, he's going to be the guy that works himself till death. Like once he's done, he's dead. That's just a reality.
He doesn't idle well.
Yeah. As soon as he's done, he's dead. Like he'll call me and be like, man, I'm having joint pain. I'm having all this. And I have a pretty good grasp on nutrition. So he'll be like, telling me, should I take this supplement? Should I do this? Should I do that? And I'm like you need to slow down. That's what you need to do. he ain't going to slow down. I would imagine that's part of it, but also like, I just don't like to fail.
Okay.
So if I work harder than everybody else, then maybe I won't fail. You can't fail if you're working hard. I don't think.
I mean, the way I say it too is that you can't fail if you keep trying. And then I'm probably going to die before I know I ever actually failed if I don't stop. So I'll either die knowing I'll either not quit or die not knowing I failed.
I mean, look at it like this, like, I'm already successful at this point.
Yeah, like, true.
There's other goals that I want, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those guys who's like, who hides his goals. Like, there's some people out there who really have dreams and they're scared to say them. I'm not that.
Yeah.
I want to sell out Madison Square Garden. I want to be like Joe Coy or Fluffy or any of those guys to fill those arenas. I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But still, even though that's a future goal, I mean, I toured with a guy that I used to watch when I was 12 years old that I used to go to school and repeat his bits. And now I can call him right now.
How unreal was that the first? So, all right, let's talk about maybe, I guess, your first interaction, meeting Carlos Mencia, how that went about, and then how you started touring with him.
We had a mutual friend. I had built up a friendship with a man here, and he had seen me at a show before, and then he kept coming out to my shows.
Okay.
And then we just kind of became boys. And he is Carlos's, like, he goes on the road with Carlos a lot. Okay. Not to open for him or anything, just he helps do some shit along the way. Count heads, sell shirts, make sure that everything's taken care of in terms of hotel rooms and all that shit, right?
Gotcha.
Kind of like he's like a road manager, essentially. And we just hit it off. And Carlos came through the improv here in Orlando. And Carlos always had a guy opening for him. And the guy that was opening for him previous to me was a man named Cisco. And he's a great comedian. He has something on HBO now, but he wants to be the headliner now. He wants to be the guy, you know, and that's the path for everybody.
Yeah.
So he's deciding to go out and do more on his own, which leaves opening spots for Carlos. And my boy hit me up and he goes, "Hey, Carlos is coming through the improv. He doesn't have an opener. Do you want to open for him?" I thought he just meant like hosted and shit. Here in Orlando, it's tough to get into the improv. So I thought he just meant like come through and host or whatever. And this was very last minute. Like, it came down to the wire. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm down. And he goes, okay, I'll let you know. And then it just came down to like the Thursday. I think I knew hours before the show. Hey,
wow.
It's a two-man show. It's just you and Carlos. Go up and do your time.
What were you feeling at that moment when they said that? Like, what was going through your head?
I'm ready.
Yeah. I mean, you've spent, what, 8 years, 10 years at this point?
I'm going on 10 years. I've been headlining shows for the last couple of years. I have well over an hour of solid material.
Good.
So when we cut that down, the hardest part is going from an hour and being like, what 15 do I want to give you?
Yeah.
So like, that's the tough part. But so I was ready. And so I went up and I had a good set, and then Carlos went up and kills, and then I go up, have a good set, and then we do like five shows that week. And at the end of the week, first off, it's weird. Carlos does something that nobody else does I've ever worked with. Sometimes he'll just be like, you know what, the show's over, but let's do karaoke. And okay. Then like he'll call me up on stage and be like, yo, Eugene, get up here. And like, we'll put like karaoke on the background and he's singing some Spanish shit. And he passed the mic to me. Right. And like, I mean, I grew up listening to rap music, so I don't know if you want me to karaoke. He passed the mic to me and he goes, hey, pick a song. And I didn't know what song I was going to say.
Yeah.
But I just went, yo, Craig, play Juicy by Biggie.
Yeah.
And it's Juicy. And so I just rapped Juicy to this crowd of people.
That's so funny. I bet it
and then after
too.
That, Carlos got on the microphone and he goes, he was talking to his audience, which always come out. And he was like, yo, my opener is moving on. He's going to start headlining and doing stuff on his own. I've been thinking about getting a new opener. Do y'all think Eugene should be my guy in the crowd?
Damn.
And then,
okay.
So from then on out, like we've been working on like details. Like he would be like, well, I'm not sure if my opener is 100% out or not. And then he's like, this is kind of like baby steps. And it has been baby steps.
Yeah.
I'll work some dates with them. Don't work dates with them. Work some dates with them. But I have a good relationship with them. We're doing St. Louis and I got a lot more dates on the year we'll be doing as well. So it's just that opening period, but now I'm one of his guys. And as soon as everything's locked up, I'm probably the guy.
That's cool. So when are your shows in St. Louis? What dates coming up?
April 7th through 10th. So I'm going to be out there April 7th through 10th at Helium Comedy Club. We got two shows, I think, Friday and Saturday, and then one on Thursday and one on Sunday.
Okay. Did you get that Spotify subscription yet or what? I listened to that Pandora bit when before we got on here.
Yeah, no, I don't pay for shit, man. People ask me how do you make it in comedy or entertainment, because I act too and I got a bunch of acting friends. Mm-hmm. And the money is so low when you start that you have to put your man.
You're good.
Everything. Amazon Prime. That's the problem of having a German Shepherd. But
oh, yeah. Oh man, big dogs who love German
Shepherds. He's been everywhere with me. I got my dog the month after I started comedy.
Okay. So he's your comedy
he's
dog.
Been all over. He's lived in the hood with me. He's lived everywhere with me. And he's been through like six different houses. And
that's funny.
So he's coming up on his 10-year anniversary too. So what were we talking about? The Spotify shit. I don't pay for anything. Like, the thing is, when you start in comedy, you don't make money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even like as a feature, I make better money when I feature with Carlos than I do with other people, of course. But like as like a regular feature,
yeah,
$75 a spot maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nothing. Like, what do you do? Say you do two shows, four shows, whatever. That's $300, right? Yeah. That's $300.
Yeah.
So how do you make that work? You have to keep your monthly bills down. Everybody wants to flash and everybody wants to be like, yo, look, I got this great car. I got this house. I got all this stuff. You got to figure out what your monthly payment is, because that's what you got to figure out. That's what you got to make, right? So if my monthly payment is I got to pay $1,000 throughout the whole thing, you got to do a lot of feature sets to get that $1,000 in that month, bro. And so you got to keep everything down. I was going to go live on a dude's couch, my boy's couch out in LA before I got married. But you just got to know, car payments, keep them down. Your rent, keep it down. Food, know how much money you're buying in food. There was times when I would be on the road and I would have I'm having a McChicken for dinner. And that's what I got.
Yep.
There's been times I've slept in parking garages just to make sure I made more money than I lost.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that sacrifice, it's all about that sacrifice. And you doing that kind of stuff is the difference between you being successful and other people not.
I met one of my best friends in comedy because I was going to go sleep in the parking garage, and he was a headliner that I was opening for.
And he let you sleep on his couch.
He was like, dude, what are you doing? Come stay with me this weekend.
Cool.
And I went and I stayed with him that whole week, and we built a friendship there. That's but cool. Like, people are too comfortable. You can't be comfortable in comedy. If you want to be a comedian, unless you're killing it on the internet and you get famous quick, you gotta grind, and you gotta sleep in less desirable conditions. I mean, I've stayed in hotels that the club have booked me where I'm sleeping and the whole fucking curtain falls down, and then there's just people walking by looking at you, and it's like, hey, guess like I'm zoo not animal. Sleeping here tonight, right? I've slept in a Walmart before, not in the Walmart, but the parking lot, you know, to lay the seat.
I mean,
back
people cook meth in there, so why not sleep in the parking lot?
I mean, you got to figure out, you got to watch your expenses, because there's no money in it. And now I'm at a point where the money is good enough that I'm straight. But like, that's just recently.
Yeah. So it's taken you this long to actually get to the point where you feel comfortable.
Now if I go out on the road and the club didn't give me a room, I'll get a room.
Yeah.
Right? But like, that's just recent. Before then, I would have just slept in the car, or I would have drove 20 hours back to the house, depending on wherever I was. I drove to do a spot in Fort Myers. So I was living in Deltona, Florida at the time. I drove down to Fort Myers to do a spot just so I could get booked in that club later. I wasn't even getting paid for this.
Oh, wow. That's eight hours.
I just drove down to Fort Myers because one of my good friends was performing, and he said, yo, you got to book this kid. I drove down there, did a guest spot, got passed to perform at that club, and then drove from Fort Myers to Springfield, Illinois, because I had a show up there.
Wow. And that's the grind.
And I did that in one go.
Nice.
I didn't stop nowhere. Just a bunch of coffee, a bunch of loud music, and keeping everything real cold to make sure you don't fall asleep.
That's cool. Oh, so another thing I want to talk about. So when we first, when I was going to Jack's Pub and Grub, I remember seeing you there, and she's your now wife.
Yeah.
But she was, I was like, I always was thinking, is this a bit or what's going on? So she started heckling you, and I didn't know if you had met this lady before or not. And
well, the setup to that is that's partially true.
Okay.
I walked in and Brenda was hosting. Shout out Brenda Lamberty. I miss her. She's out on the West Coast now, I think San Francisco. She was a good friend of mine here, and okay. She was hosting. I've always been good at crowd work.
Yeah.
I've always been good at improvising. I'm just good in the moment. And even that was, 6 years ago, but at 4 years in, I was still a veteran comic in the Orlando scene, even though I've only been at 4 years, it's still new.
Yeah.
But like, based on the scene, I was a veteran in the scene. So I walked through Jack's Pub and Grub, which at that point was just kind of like the home. That was what we did, spots there two nights a week. And I walked in and Brenda comes up to me and she goes, hey, there's a blonde woman that just keeps heckling everybody. Will you go shut her down? So I literally just
Went up there to shut her down.
I walked from the door. Like they bumped me in front of everybody. I walk from the door onto the stage and I get on stage and I just go into some bullshit jokes, just some easy stuff, just to see what happens. And she immediately opened her mouth.
And, so you had never met her before that?
No.
That's so fucking funny.
No, okay. I had no idea who she was. but... whatever. So she started opening her mouth. We went back and forth.
I could tell she liked you though. I was like,
I'm vicious though. Like I'm vicious. I said some crazy shit, boy.
I don't remember what you said, but I remember just
being like, I remember what I said. I'm not gonna put it out there, but no, I remember what I said, and it was very mean.
That's what got her though. That's what she's like, yeah. I like this guy now.
Most of it was revolved around the fact that she was a beautiful blonde woman who thinks that every guy in there wants to sleep with her, which is partially true. Yeah. But I know I'm a good looking guy too, and I know what I bring. So at the end of the day, if I was to commence in any activity with you, it'd probably be more of a treat for you than me. That's something along the lines that I said to her. A lot more graphic. But we went back and forth. I ended the set. And then I know hecklers.
Yeah.
Like there's types of hecklers. There's the guy who wants to derail the show. He's kind of just an asshole. There's the person who thinks they're a part of the show.
Yeah.
That thinks they're helping you, which they never are.
Yeah.
There's also the person that doesn't understand what's happening.
Mm.
She was that person. This was her local bar. She had never been in there on a comedy night. And she was like, why? There's no music playing. They're just up here talking. And, you know, and what's going on here? So afterwards, and I wasn't looking for anything.
Yeah.
But afterwards, I just went and sat down next to her. And I said, hey, I'm sorry I had to be an asshole to you. But I'm the only one who could handle the interaction you were giving. Some of these comedians are new. You know, I've been doing it for a little bit. Some of these comedians are new. They work hard to come up with 5 minutes and come up here. And this is maybe their one time a week that they get to go try to do what they've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
So can you please not talk the rest of the show? I understand you didn't really mean no harm, but like, can you please give them the respect and don't talk? And from there on, she goes, hey, you got a girlfriend? And I go, yeah, because I did. but sometimes that don't stop ladies.
And now you're married.
My homie Genesis was texting me while I was talking to her, and he thought I was like spitting game, and I really wasn't.
Yeah,
I really was not spitting game at all. I was not trying for anything. And he was sending me shit like, yo, I see what you're doing, dog. And I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I'm trying to make sure that you guys can do your shit.
Yeah. Dude, I love that story. That's such a great meeting story. I love it.
You know, it is a good story, kind of rom-com-y. I've been trying to find out how to bring that to the stage.
Yeah.
But I want to do it in a way that's respectful all around. Yeah. And I haven't found out how to do it.
You don't want to get slapped in the face on stage?
I mean, I'm not worried. I had a guy rush me my first year in comedy.
Oh, really? Tell me about that.
I was in St. Louis, actually. I was in St. Louis. Back then, I was doing one-liners. Like I said, I was less than a year in. And at that point, I was pretty much a Puerto Rican Anthony Jeselnik clone. And, okay. and I was just going up and doing blue one-liners because I didn't know how to bring my life into comedy yet.
Okay.
And so I would just go up. And it was working. You know, I was featuring it less than a year in. I came up quick. But it was just not, it offended somebody in the crowd.
Yeah.
And they ran up at me all crazy and jumped on stage, but your boy is a fighter. So I front kicked him right off the stage.
I wish there was footage of that.
I wish I would have blew up 6 years ago, 7 years ago. Yeah, I'm just
comedian, fucking Martin kicks Heckler off stage.
I'm pretty comfortable in tense situations. I mean, I was a bouncer for years. I was a bouncer like in a bad like club. Like people were bringing knives and guns and stuff in there. So like I'm used to confrontation. I'm not nervous within that. And so I just saw the guy running up. I could tell he was aggressive. I was like, all right, I'll kick him off the stage real quick.
See ya.
They never did comedy there again. I ruined the room, I think. But
yeah, right. They're like, all right, well, we have a lawsuit now.
They're still the girl who the girl who books that room or booked that room, she still hates me to this day.
That's
like all like I have no ill will against her, but for some reason, she hates me to this day. And like, there'll be times I'm headlining clubs or shit around there, and she'll like comment shit underneath it, like trying to diss me. But it's like, you're not headlining anything.
Yeah, yeah.
She's jealous because you're still hosting open mics and shit. You're not featuring any clubs. You're like, so I don't think it's, I don't know what's in her mind, but like I have a little space rented out, I think.
Well, that's so funny. Living rent free in there, baby. Yeah, pick some guy off the stage.
I don't know what's up with her, but that, I get that she would be upset about that, but I'm not gonna let a guy just come up on stage. I know people that's happened to, and then they got hit.
So I know you've been doing some acting too. I know that's kind of you dabbled in that, doing the commercials and stuff, right?
I've been acting for 6 years now, about 6 years.
How'd you get into that? Through stand-up?
Yeah. I was, I used to work a lot with Dean Napolitano on the road.
Okay.
Great Florida comedian. Probably one of the, I say he's the best comedian in Florida, but he kind of took me under his wing when I moved down here, and I was featuring for him for a bit. And he was acting, and he has so many different acting credits. And he's like, you need to act. He goes, you got a good look for acting. He goes, you're talented. You should start acting. And I didn't know how to do it. I don't know how to like get into that. And he kind of taught me the ropes. And I started booking a few commercials here and there. And then I've done some like indie films that aren't worth mentioning, but I've done theatrical acting. So I've done like some indie films and stuff. And I do acting classes every week now. So I train a class act, and it's pretty cool. But so I see
did you get an agent, or like how did that work? First thing.
Oh, I've had an agent for years.
When you first started, how did you go about getting an agent to get you starting getting booked?
Commercial agents is easy, especially here in Florida, because usually it's just book a look, and there's so many different agencies here in the Orlando area that you can just send out your headshot and say, hey, I want to act. And there's agencies out there that'll sign you in just because they send so many people to the audition that they're just like, here, everybody go to this.
Yeah.
And then they played another game. But those agencies aren't going to do anything for your career. They're not good. You might book some shit through them if you get lucky and you have the right look that the commercial wants, but they're not going to do anything for you acting wise. To get a theatrical agent, which is the film and television market, is a little more difficult. Mm-hmm. I have two of those now. So I have two agents here.
Sweet.
But for that, you either have to have a badass demo reel. You either have to have a bunch of acting credits already, or you got to go in and wow them when you meet them. And at the time, I didn't have really any credits in the film industry. So I went in and had to do a monologue in front of this agency and win them. And fortunate enough to do that. Yeah, yeah. So
what monologue did you do? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was from Supernatural.
Okay.
I was the character Dean, and there's a scene in Supernatural where his brother's like dead at his feet, mm-hmm. and he had to be real emotional and like cry and shit during it. I'm more of a dramatic actor than I am a comedic actor.
Most comedians can do drama really well, man.
I prefer drama. I know it's like I do stand up, but to me, it's almost two different lanes at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, I don't like a lot of television comedy because it's all network type hacky shit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be the goofy husband. I'm not going to be over the top. Like everything is so high, high comedy. Like everything is like Chris Farley level of comedy, and Chris is great, but that's not what I do. I'm not the pratfall guy. The new thing is like stoner comedy. So now like Seth Rogen has the market on that, where everything is like drug, like marijuana stoner based. And,
mm-hmm.
and not that that's a problem. There's been films there that I like. It's just not me.
You just have a different style.
Yeah. And so like, it's, that's still high comedy. Like Superbad is still like high comedy, funny movie,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not the guys in Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
Right. So you have that. I think my favorite comedy had to be The Office, just because there was some level of realism to it.
Got
and it. Even though you had the high energy characters, you had the high comic characters with Dwight and Michael, everybody else was kind of within the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Like you had seen the other characters at your job before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was more realism there. That's what I prefer.
You don't want to be like Everyone Loves Raymond or whatever, everybody like that kind of
stuff. I would love to have my own show. I have written a script for my own pitch.
Gotcha.
And it's a comedic show, but it's still grounded. It's still within the realm of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so out there.
Yeah, some of these shows, man, you watch them and you're just like, these people aren't real. These people just don't even feel like they could be actual people. I know my wife was watching Marvelous Miss Maisel or whatever. I can't stand that show, man.
So I watched the first two seasons, and I actually was a fan of the first two, but
they're too quick. It's hard
for me to watch too much, but on Mrs. Maisel, I love the dude who plays Lenny Bruce.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I saw it, yeah.
I love the dude who plays Lenny Bruce, and I always wished that they would do a spinoff with that guy and let him do a Lenny Bruce series.
Oh, that'd be good.
Because I'm a big fan of Lenny Bruce. I would love to play Lenny Bruce too, if anybody wants.
Actually, you could do Lenny. I feel like you'd be good.
I would love to play Lenny Bruce, but that would be the comedy that I would want to do, like yeah, that.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I mostly watch dramas too. Like we're going through Sons of Anarchy right now. I like to wait until everybody has stopped talking about shows and everything has gone, and then pick it up 5 years later.
So you haven't seen it before?
No, I'm on season 6 now.
Oh shit! Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We did that with Game of Thrones too. A couple months ago, we did all of Game of Thrones, and I don't watch any of it. But by the time we watched it, anything you that could you
binge might, it all.
Yeah, that's how my wife is. My wife won't watch something new no more because she's like, then it's over, and then I gotta wait forever.
I know. It's like, man, I'm not waiting a week every time.
Yeah, like which one are we watching now? We had that problem with Ozark when we were watching Ozark, and then you gotta wait forever for Ozark to come back. Or let's see, what did we watch before that? Even Young Rock. We watched the Young Rock show.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. I haven't seen it.
I like it, but I'm a huge Dwayne Johnson fan.
Okay.
We watched season one of Young Rock, but that dude's so busy that it took forever for season two to come out. So
yeah,
that was a good one. That's a good comedy, I guess.
I haven't seen that. I need to check that out.
It is what it is. It's not gonna win any awards, but it's a nice light watch.
Yeah.
Like my favorite show of all time is probably Peaky Blinders.
See, I haven't seen that either. My wife wants to watch that.
Fantastic. But if you watch it, you got to watch it with the subtitles on because those accents are so thick that you just pieces of them that you won't you won't understand it.
Is that even English?
And there's a scene in there. I think it's season 4 or 5 between Tom Hardy and Adrian Brody. That is the best cinematic scene I've ever seen.
I'll have to check it out. I gotta watch
it. It's such a great show, but it's intense. You know, and if I've had a couple drinks and I've been out and then I come back home, I don't necessarily want to throw that on. So then you go on a light watch where you don't really have to pay attention to all of it.
Oh, St. Louis is an investment show. What do you have after that? After the St. Louis, do you have anything else booked past that?
I think I'm going to Alabama. I think I'll be in Alabama. It's not officially announced, but I think I'm going to be out in Alabama the next week. So I might be in Alabama.
Okay.
We're in talks.
What show? Like a comedy show? What are you doing?
I might be with Carlos in Alabama.
Okay.
Yeah, I might be with Carlos in Alabama at the Stardome. So we may be there. I'm pretty sure it'll happen, but it's always last minute with him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always like, hey, yeah, get on down. And it's like, all right, okay, let me cancel all this shit. And this. But it's cool. You know, I'm not mad at it, but
hey, man.
It's always left. You'll be here. It's you hear like whispers of rumors when you work with him. And then it's like, oh, it's true. Let me cancel all this shit and get the fuck out of here.
So you have your YouTube channel, right? You got
I'm trying to build it. I am horrendous when it comes to internet shit. But I didn't start this to do internet stuff. I just wanted to be a great stand-up comedian. And now you have to do everything on the internet. That's the way that everything is, and I get that. But it's not what I want to do.
Yeah, you want to
The last bit I just wrote a 15-minute story.
Okay.
You can't put that in a reel on Instagram and make it pop, right? No. So, it's like, I post this a lot, but it's not like the bit would be better if I could give you the other 6 minutes of it.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to get YouTube going more, but
it's hard, man. You gotta find those little clips that get people's attention enough to follow you and then continue to watch and watch the, you know, longer clips and stuff like that. So it's definitely,
I have some shit pop on on TikTok. Not that I got 7,000 followers, but most of those came from one video. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. I posted one clip and then all of Puerto Rico followed me. So,
nice. So are you ever going to go to do shows in Puerto Rico?
That's the goal. I would love to do a show in Puerto Rico that I headline.
When was the last time you were there?
I've never been.
Oh, okay. I might be able to hook you up with some people in Puerto Rico. I was there for.
I've never been. I have family who live there, of course.
Okay.
What part? All of my dad's family is from there. They all grew up in Caguas.
Okay.
And my dad, he goes back ever since I was growing up. Whenever a hurricane would hit, he would go back and clean up the island.
Yep, that's why I was there.
So he would do that. And I've just never made it there. I've only left the country one time. Dude, and I guess Puerto Rico
is like a couple hour flight, maybe.
I guess Puerto Rico is technically the country, but I've never left. I only left the mainland once.
Okay.
We did a cruise to the Bahamas. But I would love to do Puerto Rico.
It's super fun there. I love Puerto Rico. Love it. Just seeing after, especially because I went there after Hurricane Maria to help with the recovery. Mm-hmm. And I work with like the cell phone companies and stuff like that, keeping the cell phone towers on. And it was terrible to see what happened, but it was really cool to see the community come together and like the people of Puerto Rico really like help each other. And it was just Latinos really cool to see general. That.
Latinos in general are very, very tight knit. That's why me and Carlos work well, because his audience loves me from the moment I get on stage and open my mouth. Mm-hmm. And they're all very supportive. And even though like I may be Puerto Rican and they may be Honduran or Guatemalan and whatever, at the end of the day, they still there's love another Latinos out there fucking doing it.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. They're very supportive. But that's the family aspect of the Latin communities as well. Like family's everything to them.
Yep.
Like my dad gave up on his dreams for the family, and everything about him is the family. They've his mother lived with him. With him and my mother, his brother lived with him. Just everything is always so tight knit. My dad gave everything away just to help anybody in the family out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to have that and the small fan base that I'm starting to build now, to have people who kind of just view me as they want me to win.
Yeah.
It's almost like people invest in you, right? It's almost like people see you and they're like, I like this kid. And they go, I'm going to invest my energy in that. So when he wins, it feels like we won.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I'm starting to get that with some of the fan base I'm starting to build, which is pretty cool.
So you have a pretty solid following where there's
certain places I do. Certain places I do. And this year was the first time I had somebody message me and go, hey, I drove 2.5 hours to do this, to watch you do this show.
That's
cool. That was pretty cool. And that was just somebody who found me on TikTok.
That's even cooler.
I did this show in Sunrise, Florida with Skippy Price, and we co-headlined like a little theater show, and I posted it on TikTok and somebody goes, I'm coming. And then it came through.
Wow.
And they didn't actually, it's longer than that. They live in Kissimmee. So however long Sunrise is. So yeah,
it's I'm longer. Coming. You're like, okay, guy on TikTok.
They came through.
Like, I'm the comment. Yeah. I exist.
I was like, cool. Hey, well, I appreciate that. But I appreciate anybody who takes the time to do shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen comedians who just like after they're done doing their sets or whatever, they go back and they just kick it or whatever, and they're not out there. Mm-hmm. Every time I'm done with a show, I'm at the front. Talking to everybody because without people coming to shows, I have nothing.
Then you're nothing. Yeah.
Like I'm not an internet guy. I'm not making money off the internet. I need the people to go to the venue and watch the show. And that's what I want. I prefer to do live shows.
It's so different in person. There's a feeling of doing comedy in person that just, there's nothing like it.
If live stand-up didn't exist, I don't know that I would be doing comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I may still be in the entertainment industry doing something, but I don't know if comedy would be the avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to make funny clips. I don't want to make sketches for you. I'm not trying to get on Saturday Night Live. Yeah, that would be cool. I would do Weekend Update. That's fine. But, like, I'm not... That's never been the aspiration.
Yeah. You like the art of comedy.
So I like getting up, you giving me the microphone and going, hey, it's fucking go time.
I love your crowd work. You're always, your crowd work is so funny, dude. I love it.
Well, I never know what I'm going to do when I get on stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I got material, but there's times I go on stage and I'm like, let me see how long I can go before I jump into the material.
Nice. Okay.
And,
how long till you got comfortable enough to like really do that to where you could be like, I got jokes, but I'm going to try something that I don't even know what I'm going to do.
I would say I got that comfortable. Let's see. Probably about 5 years ago, probably about 5 years in, I guess. It was when I transitioned from jokes to doing more me.
Okay.
Right. Because there was a time that I was just writing jokes that were funny jokes. And then it was me telling funny jokes. But then in my experience, people remember the joke if you do that, but they don't remember who you are.
Yeah.
But for you to grow as a comedian, you need people to remember who you are. So I started getting real personal and I started just doing everything about me. And I think when I made it that way, I started just opening up more and just let's see what's happening. Also, I'm a huge Patrice O'Neal fan.
Okay.
Like Patrice is a fucking god to me. So like one of the things he did that he did better than anybody else is his setups were through the audience. So like he would know what joke he would want to do, but it wouldn't be like yesterday I was doing this. Let me tell you the joke. It would be, let me talk to the audience and get them to say what I need them to say to lead into the joke. I started writing my jokes in a way that I could use the audience as a setup. But when you do that, it leaves the opportunity for different things to happen. Mm-hmm. And when different things happen, a good enough comedian knows how to roll and play off of that. One thing a lot of comedians, I think a lot of younger comedians are scared to do crowd work or scared to be involved in that moment. But the thing is, you're set up to win. I have a microphone. The light's on me. They can hear everything I say. They can see me. If you get into it with somebody from the audience, if you ask for it, it's different. It's a different vibe. But like, say it was a regular heckler, like just some guy yelled some shit at you. The other people are in the audience are like, hey, fuck this dude. We're watching the show.
Yeah.
So you can
use that.
You already have them on your side.
Yeah.
All you can do now is fail. All you have to do is wait. But the also thing is a lot of comedians, when they're doing crowd work, think that they need to immediately have something ready. Just trust that you will have something ready. So if I'm working through the crowd and somebody says something, I don't immediately have to be funny. I just have to be comfortable enough and know that at some point I'm going to be able to pull that in and then have something funny.
Okay. It doesn't have to. So it's not even about acknowledging it right at that moment. It's kind
of it doesn't have to be fast. A lot of guys are uncomfortable in the silence of it.
Yeah.
But comedy is silence. And this is all shit from Dave Chappelle. This is just me rehashing Dave Chappelle shit because I'm a student of comedy. I fucking treat it like it's school. I study shit.
No, it is.
The biggest thing I've heard him say that I took from Chappelle is be comfortable in the silence. If it's silence, it doesn't mean you're losing. It means they're listening. When they start talking, that's when you've lost them. So a lot of people hear silence and they can't take it because they're so used to getting that laugh per minute.
Yeah.
I purposely throw silence into my show now. Like there's time when I do stories, I'll bring it down just to know that once I bring it down, it's coming up hard, right?
Okay.
Pause. But
I'll focus in on you. And yeah.
but yeah, if you bring it down, then the explosion is going to be bigger. It's going to be a larger laugh. People can only laugh for so long before they're like, ha, 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 ha. They get tired of it.
Yeah.
Give them a chance to breathe. Let's bring it down and then let it go back.
Okay. Well, that takes that takes time. That's experience right there. Understanding that little, the ebbs and flows of the making the audience.
The audience is the instrument. Yeah. We're musicians. The audience is the instrument. You just got to know how to play it.
Interesting.
Right. And the longer you play the instrument, the better you typically get at it. Right. So this ain't shit that you can do in year one or year two. This is shit that you get your Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours in, and then eventually you get it. I'm just now not a new comedian in my eyes. At 10 years in, I'm just now not a new comedian. Like I got my doctorate and now I'm ready to go.
Interesting. That's a good way to put it. That's a very good way.
Because now I'm 10 years in. Now I've seen pretty much everything you could see outside of playing a big arena. But up until that point, you're just trying. You're just trying shit out. You're just hoping. But you're new. And to me, you're new until you're 10 years in. So July 30th, I'm no longer new.
That's a good way to put it. That's a good perspective to have on it. And to as far as drive wise, you know what I mean? And make yourself. I think it's very important for people to hear that aspect is just the work, the amount of work, the amount of failure, the amount of crap that you've overcome and put into to get to the point that you're at.
I mean, it's if you compare it to any other form of work, which it is work, you gotta. Even if you're an HVAC or whatever, you don't just start out killing it, true, right? You don't just start out with your own business. You go on, you apprentice, you learn how to do it. You learn how to handle a different situations. You go through enough broken down ACs or heaters and shit that you've never seen to eventually you build that experience and now you're not new anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, they would never let somebody who's 6 years in just start cutting people open in the surgery room.
They're not even done with comedy school yet.
Comedy is the same thing. You have to put that work in. And it seems like maybe if you compare it to that, something is such a surgery, then it's not as serious. And comedy is not necessarily serious. But I respect the people who come out to the show, right? So, like, if I go up and I got to do an hour and I'm not ready to do that hour, I take that shit personally because, like, people went out, they paid money, they paid for parking, they paid for babysitters, they paid for food, they paid for drinks. They've spent a couple hundred dollars to come out here. So if I'm not ready prepared to deliver, that was my fault.
Yeah.
I don't like to let that shit happen. Like, even if I'm in a shitty room, I tell everybody who opens for me now, whenever I'm headlining, if I have an opener, cause God, I try to share as much comedy game as I can, not unsolicited, but like if I have somebody who's opening for me and we got that vibe, I try to give them as much game that I've had passed on to me. Before I ever walk onto the stage, and if you watch me, if you're ever at a show later on, if you watch me, I say shit out loud to myself. My mouth, I literally, every time I walk on a stage, I say, this is the life you chose, so go do this shit.
There you go. Well,
and I say it every time I walk on stage. Because sometimes we show up at a room and maybe there's not as many people there as we thought. Or maybe the room isn't set up to our liking. Or maybe it's just a shitty show in general, but whatever it is, I signed up for all of this.
Yep.
So it's not, I'm not allowed to take it off.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will. Some people will be like, oh, this is a shitty room. Let me go up and autopilot this shit.
Yeah.
I don't let myself do that. I'll go out on the shield. I'm going to go out and play it like we're in a sold out arena and hope that the shit fucking works. Because I don't like wasting people's time.
Yeah.
And I don't like I would hate to go to a show and I paid all this money and I took my wife out because you don't go to shows alone typically. Mm-hmm. And now we had a good dinner and we had a good date and I'm half a rack in. I paid $500 for everything. And now I'm just sitting there and some comedian comes up and he's fucking reading off the set list. He's working new shit out and you could tell he's working new shit out.
And you're there for an actual
show. Like,
it's
like, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's not a good time for anybody. My goal is to make sure that everybody in that room has a good time.
That's a good. So I like the little mantra you tell yourself before going on stage.
I
like
every time I do it, I even do it when I act too, because if you're ever not in love with comedy, get out.
Mm-hmm.
Get out because you're wasting your time because this is purely a passion driven industry.
Oh yeah.
So if you don't have the passion for it, you're not going to make it. You see so many of these guys. When I started in the Midwest, everybody was doing Bob and Tom radio and shit. And you would get all these headliners that would come through and they've been in the game for 30 years. They've been through the industry when the comedy slump that happened in the 90s and they've been through all that, but they never made it yet. So they're just doing the same act that they were doing back in 92. They're just going around because they have no other skill set. If a young comic comes up and talks to them, the first thing they'll tell them is like, oh man, choose a different career. Choose this, choose that. maybe you just didn't have the passion for it. And maybe you had your failures led you to this life of mediocrity that you feel like you don't want somebody else to go through. But those who are passionate, if you stay in it long enough and you keep working and you keep writing and you keep doing shit, everybody will find a lane.
Yeah.
It's just people give up. People don't get success, and then they get bitter because they see other people get success. And then that eats at their psyche. And then eventually they just become like a shell of somebody who's showing up and doing it for the $100 and the cheeseburger you get.
I think a lot of it too is people that they just don't. They're scared, I guess, to try, or they're scared to fail, and they have that regret, like, man, I wish I would have kept trying. I wish I would have done this, or wish I would have done that. So then when they see other people who have the balls who out there and keep trying and keep failing and keep just, you know, eating shit, that they get, you know, they get bitter, and it's either you get better or you get bitter, you know. And
it's a matter of, I'm 10 years deep, and this is what I want to do, but I gave up everything for this.
Yeah.
I gave up a successful fight career. I also, coming out of high school, I could have gone to Ivy League schools. Like I could have gone to pretty much any college in the country.
Yeah. You're like, no, let's go to dive bars and talk.
Let's throw all this shit out. Let's throw out the books. Let's throw out all this. Let's throw out the CEO job I could have eventually had, or maybe it was the medical field or whatever thing that a Yale education would have got me. And I said, we're going to put it all into this. I don't see how people can give up on themselves like that.
Yeah.
I don't get it. The only thing I fear is failure. And I think that's maybe the main driving mechanism behind it. But I don't know, bro.
See, my fear is just all of a sudden waking up one day, 30 years later, and being like, oh man, I've been working this job that I hate, making someone else who owns a company richer and richer. And I'm just, my life is just this meaningless, repetitive task that I do day in and day out. And I don't want that. So as long as I'm not doing that, I think
that's the reality of the country we live in. And God, we live in a great country. I'm not here dissing it, but the idea of the American dream is the opposite of what a dream is almost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, back in the day, the American dream was come here, find a job, make enough money, take care of your family. But that's really just putting you as a cog into the mechanism that is capitalism.
Correct.
So now you're just working and you're making your money to pay for the richer people who are above you. Mm-hmm. And it just goes right up the ladder. And that's fine. That's a fine life if that's what you want to do. But too many people have been taught to kill their dreams and to jump right into that.
Yeah.
And we almost breed that into every child in every school. When you're going through school, how many times have people told you, oh, you want to do that? Okay. You want to play basketball? Well, you better have a backup plan.
Yeah.
You want to do music? You better have a backup plan. You want to be a professional skateboarder? Better have a backup plan. You want to do comedy? You better have a backup plan.
It's never like, hey, you can do this, this, and this, work your ass off, and maybe you'll get there one day. But it's always like, oh, you better not do that.
I do not. If this eventually turns against me and it doesn't work and I'm out of it, I don't know. I'm a hard worker. I can go get a job, but that's not what I'm going to do.
You're not going to have regret, though. You're not going to have the difference between you and someone else is if for whatever reason you don't meet the success that you aspire to, you're still going to be a lot closer than a lot of people. And you're going to look back on your life and be like, at least I fucking try.
If comedy was ever taken away from me and acting, my two main artistic outlets at this point, I would go buy a tiny house and go live in the middle of nowhere where I have no bills, and I would just live off the land. And just
that's what I'm trying to do.
I would just be done with it all. I'll go pull my little trailer tiny house up to some lake and just chill there, pick off pigeons and just...
Well, that's kind of what I mean. We sold our house. We're traveling around in an RV, so we've been doing that for the last year.
So that's That's what I want to do. I want to do what Bert Kreischer does. Have a bus, have the people that open for me and work with me on that bus, and we just travel and do shows.
Yep.
And that's what I really want to do. And that guy does comedy, like does the lifestyle of comedy better than anybody else.
100%.
Better than anybody else.
Especially when he's doing those drive-ins and stuff, the shows at the drive-ins during COVID and crap. Like, just, he was like really changing the game there, man.
He lives it like it's fun and it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And he goes out and he does shit. Most of the time when comics are out on the road, they're not doing anything.
Yeah,
most of the time you're just sitting in whatever Ramada Inn that has the blood stains cleaned off the carpet, and then you're just chilling in that Ramada all day when you do the show. And I only say that because I was at the Comedy Zone in Jacksonville and we were in a Ramada, but we were in the Ramada and Comedy Zone in Jacksonville, and they're redoing like a hot tub or a kid pool right outside my room. So I just hear construction going the whole time, and there's like kids running back and forth. The fucking air conditioner vent, whatever.
Like, about went to Motel 8, man.
So yeah, I want to do bus life. I want to do a tour bus, or like RV would be cool too. But the problem is I don't want to drive.
Yeah.
Like if I'm doing that, I don't also want to be the driver.
Yeah.
Cause my wife wants to do that. My wife just wants to live on the road like that. And I'm like, if we live like that, I'm hiring a driver.
What's holding you back? Is she work in Orlando?
Oh, yeah, she works in Orlando. And we like to have a home too. I just mean when I'm on the road. She makes good money. I make not great money. I make okay. You know, I'm doing okay. And to do that at this point would be not good for my career.
Gotcha.
Because I'm not, yeah, I headline on local shows here, or I'll headline within the Southeast, but nobody knows me. I'm not selling out venues all over the country, but when I can,
you better believe it.
We make that switch. I'm out. When I can do that, we make the switch. We get a bus, and that's what we do.
Well, I'm hoping that for you, dude. I hope to see that one day.
I would love for that to be. I've been working on my own machine story. That's what I've been searching for. That's what I've been searching for. That's why I tell stories.
That's what put him on the map, dude, was that machine story.
And you know, there's other comics that have done that. Angela Johnson had her nail salon bit that put her on the map. Bert has the machine. Jay Larson has the bit about getting a random phone call. All great bits, and all kind of changed their career.
Yeah.
And I think I got a story right now that I've told three times on stage, and I think I got this story that's going to be that. I just got to
take your shirt off. It'll be a whole different experience than Bert.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah, like, you're like,
if we didn't live in Florida, I would wear jackets and shit to kind of hide me.
Yeah.
Not to sound cocky, but being a good-looking comedian who's in shape doesn't really work for you. You have to disarm all that at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because
I think Josh Wolf does a good job at that, because he's jacked too, dude. He's fucking ripped.
Like, if I pull my shirt off and they're like, oh, he's got abs, great. Now, it was like, what the
fuck? Like, funny. Fuck him. Every guy in there is fuck him.
Yeah. And then their wife likes me because I'm funny. And then
and then they're like, fuck him.
It's not a good move. It's not a good move. Now, I'm not going to go the other route and like let myself go get out of shape.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not who I am. But I would definitely, anytime I'm north of Orlando, I got a jacket on just because I'm like, let me hide everything. Just do comedy. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That's why they do it. Look at Rogan. Rogan is jacked, but Rogan, whenever he performs, long sleeve black t-shirts, a little oversized.
You do get judged. You get judged that first, the first second you see somebody, you're getting judged. So if like you said, husband sees you all jacked up, and his wife's like, oh damn, what up? He's
unless you do bro comedy, which I don't really, but unless you're like a bro comic that comes out, I think it could work for you then, but that's just not my style.
Yeah.
But if you did like bro comedy, it might work. But I don't have that aspect of me. I mean, I guess I'm kind of a bro, but I'm not like a bro comic. Yeah. I'm not like a frat guy. I didn't do any of that. So
that's funny.
I'm not even really a partier or anything like that. I'm just an old guy in a 31-year-old body.
Yeah. I know. Every time we're like, it's like 7, 8 o'clock at night, and I'm like, oh, we're going to bed. Sweet. Like, but I'm like happy to do it.
I'm just like, it's just who I am. Like, people invite me to parties and shit, and like, that's not what I like to do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like to go to clubs where the music's loud or anything like that. I'd rather go to some dive bar where if you wanted to talk to somebody, a conversation can actually be had. I'm not one guy, a guy that's like going out and like, hey, let's go to the strip club and do all this. It's not me.
Waste a bunch of money for blue balls.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't even been to a strip club. And last time I played Gregory's, which was years ago, Gregory's Comedy Club out in Coco. I don't know if he's the manager or not still, but there's a dude, Alan, out there who was managing it. And I got done doing the show and he's like, dude, let's hang out. And this guy's 40 years older than me at this point. And I was like, you're trying to network because you're like, I want to make sure he likes me. I want to get brought back and do the shows or whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, sure, yeah, let's hang out. And he goes, here, come on in. We're going to go to this strip club. And I'm like, fuck. Okay, we'll go to the strip club. I drive him over there. I walk in, this guy's VIP there. Everybody knows him. He's like, here, let me get you a dance. I'm like, no, I don't need any of that. What do you want to drink? A Diet Coke. I'm like, I don't know where this night is going.
Yeah, yeah.
After a couple hours, I drop him off and he's like, dude, next time you come, I got this whole house. I'm the only one who stays here. You can just kick it here. I'm like, I'm not staying with you, dog. Yeah, and I know he wasn't trying to do
anything. He's old like and that. Wants a friend, someone to hang out
with. But I'm like, I'm not your buddy who's gonna spend the night with you and go tell some some yuck yucks at your
We're gonna go put a tent in the backyard and
Road stories are crazy. We got a little crazy in Thursday in Jacksonville when we were up there because it was a packed show and me and Carlos had great sets and people like to send you shots and stuff. And I'm not a shot guy.
Yeah, buddy.
And I can drink. Like I drink, my go-to is Lagavulin 16 and I drink the shit neat. But I'm not trying to take like Fireball or Jaeger or they were giving us Washington apples. I don't know. Do you know what that is?
No.
I didn't either. I think it's Crown Royal and something, but okay. it tastes like Kool-Aid, right? So we're just, and they keep bringing it to us. And we took some shots there. People kept buying us drinks. We did our karaoke thing. And by the time we're done with all of this nonsense, everybody's like, yo, we're going next door to this bar. And we always kicked it at this bar. So we went over and I walk in and people are treating me like I'm a celebrity because I just did the show and everybody's like coming up and buying me drinks and stuff.
Nice.
And my problem is I think in my day to day, and I'm getting better at it. I think I walk around with an energy that I might be an asshole, but I'm not. I'm just kind of introverted unless I really know you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so whenever
people you got RBF, buy me, man.
It's 100%. 100%. And so like when I talk to somebody nowadays, and it's been something I've been working on for years, I really turn up the energy.
Mm-hmm.
Because me at my neutral might come off as aggressive and it's not. It's just...
That's just me, man.
And I'm like, so I really turn up the energy just to show people like, hey, I'm not an asshole.
You're like, I don't know why I just emanate Johnny Bravo, but I swear I'm not like Johnny Bravo.
So one thing I've been doing recently is like when people buy me drinks, I take them because I appreciate the support and I don't want to be the dick that turns the drink away.
Yeah, yeah.
I got so many drinks that night, bro. And then we go to this bar and everybody is buying us drinks. And we get wasted.
Yeah.
Wasted. So a long story, boring. I go back to the hotel. We go to bed. We go back out to that bar the next day. And I walk in and people are yelling my name like, yo, Eugene. And I look at him. I go, who the fuck are these people? I had no idea who any of these people were.
Perfect.
Somebody came up to me and goes, what about that Johnny Walker double black scotch shot or something? Apparently, I had an inside joke with somebody that I don't remember.
Those are the best nights, dude. Those are the best nights.
So I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're like, dude, the guy's like, dude, we were best friends last night. We hung out for hours. You're like, I don't even recall you.
The last thing I remember is one of the bouncers there was at the show. And this dude is huge. Mm-hmm. He's like 6'6", 340. Like, he's a monster. And we hit it off. And he carried me around the night, the whole night. Like he'd be like, jump on. And then I would just like ride him like a backpack. And then he would stop me at a place. We would mingle. He would go get me a drink and be like, hey, where you going? And then, bam, we're back up. And I just... I had like an escort guy just carrying me around to make a little.
That's too fucking funny.
So the next night we all took it real easy.
Yeah.
And Carlos was like, because Carlos treats me well. Yeah. He treats me like I'm like his little brother. And he's like, good. Dude, yeah, yesterday was wild. Let me show you the trick. And we started every time people were buying us drinks, we had pulled up a trash can and we were like throwing them in the trash when nobody was looking. We're not drinking at all tonight.
That's the best way to do it, man. They think you took it. They're offended.
And yeah, we would take it. And, oh, there's the curtain. Yeah. So that next night, we took it easy. Road stories are crazy, I guess. I've been doing more of that. Like I said, I've been watching what other comedians do to pop, and I've been trying to do more. So I'm starting to vlog more. I vlogged all Jacksonville, and I'm shitty at it, but it'll get better.
Dude, like anything, like starting comedy, you just got to keep doing it. You're going to get better and better at it.
So I'll vlog tonight. I don't know when you release the podcast, but tonight I got some shows in the Villages that I'll vlog, and then I'll vlog this weekend in Ocala. And then the following week, we'll do all of St. Louis, which is going to be great because there's some places I want to go in St. Louis.
Yeah, this will come out Tuesday, so I think that'll be right.
Cool.
Right before that St. Louis shows.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm in St. Louis. That'll be dope. We'll go back to the St. Louis Zoo. I used to go there all the time as a kid, and I'm a big animal fan. So nice. I'll just go kick it in the zoo.
So say those show dates again. April 7th through the 10th.
Yeah, April 7th through 10th, we're out in St. Louis, and tentatively the next week I'll be in Alabama. I'm not sure what the exact dates are. April 7th through 10th in St. Louis, that's the Helium Comedy Club.
Okay.
And then the next one, if I'm there, will be the Stardome in someplace in Alabama. I don't know. Birmingham, I don't know. Someplace in Alabama, there's a club called the Stardome, and I may be there.
I'll put it all in the description once we get there, but... Hey, man, we've been going for about an hour and a half here. Do you have anything you want to touch on before we cut this thing?
I mean, nah, bro. If you have any other things you want to ask, I'm an open book. Other than that, all my social media is at Eugene Comedy.
Okay. Hey, if you want to check him out, at Eugene Comedy, he's going to be doing some stuff in St. Louis here, like we just said, April 7th through the 10th. Check him out at the Helium Comedy Club there, possibly Alabama. Hey man, thanks for coming on, and cool, I'll be watching and rooting for you, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me.
Good time. Yeah, dude.